Hello, everybody. This is Bill Cameron from The Drive. Podcasts of The Drive are presented by Southeastern Industrial Contractors, now hiring for great-paying skilled trade positions. Call 334-209-6355 to learn more. Thanks for listening.
Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome in. It is the Thursday edition of The Drive. Hope everybody doing well. Boy, what a beautiful day today has been. We hope you're doing well. And welcome in. It's Bill, Dan, and Dan at the controls. And Justin Ferguson back with us in the studio. It's been a while, Ferg. How you doing?
It's been a long time. Yeah, glad to be back. Glad to have a good day. And, a lot to talk about. Glad I get to be in here for a couple of hours. Even though it's an off week, there's so much we could talk about.
Oh, you are not,
especially
kidding.
With basketball. Coming,
oh yeah,
this weekend
got
as
a
well,
huge,
so, yeah.
huge game coming
good,
up
good,
on
good
Sunday.
Good week to come back in here.
Oh yeah, big the biggest early season test thus far. Not going to be many bigger than playing against the number one team in the country.
And how amazing is that? I was doing Doug's show earlier today, and the thought that both
Auburn and Alabama are playing number one teams.
I mean, depending on which poll you want to use, like one of the number one team in the country is playing an SEC team from Alabama this week. Purdue's going, that game's in Tuscaloosa.
It is. Tuscaloosa, right? Tonight.
Yeah, true road game for Purdue. And then Houston playing what I imagine will be a decisively pro-Auburn crowd on Sunday. I got my credential. I'm going to try to make it up to Birmingham on Sunday as well for a big showdown. Not to dismiss Auburn's early competition, but a serious upgrade.
Yeah. This is not even close.
Yeah, oh, yeah. From what you've seen, you've delved into the numbers some, mm-hmm. Ferg, and it's, I mean, yep. you're jumping up a couple of weight classes, right, when you're going
and you're playing a team that has been the most consistent thing in college basketball the last five seasons. Like, it doesn't matter who's on that team. It doesn't matter what time of the year. Houston is going to be Houston. They barely lose. They rebound the heck out of the ball, and they have the number one defense in America year in and year out. Like you know exactly what you're getting, and that's what makes this such a fascinating game. We'll probably dive into all the ins and outs of it. This is like a really cool styles make fights game, because you have the best defense in America going up against an Auburn offense that should have plenty of confidence with the way they've operated the first few games of the season.
We'll get into it the more we talk about the Houston game, and I'll probably try to make this a point on the Observer podcast too, but Kelvin Sampson is, in a lot of ways, what Auburn thought they were getting with Hugh Freeze, right? When you think about like checkered past, and it hadn't worked out at a couple other places.
But he'd
won, and you're willing to overlook some of the questions because you think that it's going to mean winning. And for Houston and Kelvin Sampson, he's had, like, if you look at guys at their current jobs, it's on the absolute.
There isn't a more consistent program in the country.
Yeah, and there isn't. And it has history, but it wasn't exactly a winning factory when he got there. Like, they had fallen on hard times to a degree, and he's turned them into, like you just said, one of the most consistent programs in all of college basketball. And it really is. I mean, it's one of the more remarkable. We were saying it about, like, trying to find peers to Bruce Pearl and what he did at Auburn. Like, you could look at Baylor.
Yeah, Scott Drew at Baylor.
You could look at Scott Drew at Baylor. You could look at Gonzaga and what Mark Few's accomplished. And, I mean, there are some, a couple
they
of
were they were coming up before Few.
And
Few was on that staff.
That's true. And Tennessee, Tennessee had history, but, they weren't exactly a powerhouse when Rick Barnes got there, and they've become a constant presence near the top of the SEC, too. There aren't that many examples. Kelvin Sampson's one of them.
Oh, yeah.
Like, he's maybe the best example. And this could be one of his best teams.
It could be. They returned several players from a team that played for a national title last season. They had an elite recruiting class. They're off to a pretty good start on defense again. Interesting. Their offense has kind of been not great early in the year in their paycheck games, but it's Houston. Like, they're going to limit possessions, and they're going to try to choke the life out of you on defense, and that's their strategy, and it works. I mean, you go back and look, like, Houston's like the last four or five seasons, they've barely lost games. Like, they may lose five or six in a season. Mm-hmm. And so it's as big of a challenge as you can get, but it's such a great opportunity for Auburn because if you can compete with this team, you feel like your ceiling's going to be pretty good this year. If you can win, you know, it's such a huge feather in your cap. But if you lose, you'll know exactly what you got to do to face the teams moving forward. So it's nothing but a great opportunity. When I talked to Mike Burgermaster, Auburn's offensive coordinator, a few weeks ago, who also is the scheduling guru for this team, he was saying, like, look, we load up on quad one games, these elite quad 1A games like this, because the math says – you can lose the majority of them, but if you win a couple, it means everything.
More than makes up for the losses.
Just one or two. So when you look at Auburn, it's got to play Arizona and Purdue and Michigan. And then, like, Oregon and NC State are going to be really good teams. You know, just in non-conference play, you can look at those and say –
It's like Oakland's schedule. Right? Well, the three teams we're talking about, right, are the three teams – I believe Michigan, Purdue, and Houston – are the three teams Oakland has played so far.
Yeah, well, I don't think Oakland's going to be making a deep run. I mean, they may, but, I mean, it reminds you of mentioning Alabama. It's like Alabama's schedule a couple of years ago, and they lost a few of those early on. They end up in the Final Four.
They lost more than they won, and it doesn't matter. So, again, that's the thing. It's like I look at Auburn's schedule cup coming here, and I look at – run down that list again. Houston, Purdue, Arizona – NC State, Oregon,
Michigan,
and whatever else and you get in Vegas. I look at those six right there, and I say, and I 100% believe this. I look at those six and say, if you can win two of them, awesome. If you can win three, throw a parade because your team is punching above its weight class.
If three of those six teams miss the NCAA tournament, it would be an upset. Like, I think you're probably talking about, and I think it'd be. I mean, it's likely all six.
Okay. Those six teams are six of the top 30 in the country.
Yes.
Right.
Like I mean, there's a long time to go between now and Selection Sunday, but you're right. Right now, like, those are.
Like, Oregon and NC State are right on the outside of the polls right now.
And there aren't that many SEC teams, I would imagine, that can say, yeah, we've got, between now and the start of conference play, we've got six major conference tournament teams. And Auburn already thinks they've played some non-conference games against tournament level competition, probably
two of them.
Yeah, probably mid, maybe. Probably maybe, you know, mid-major, one bid league kind of tournament level teams, but still
not
teams
even mid-major. Teams, one of them's a mid-major,
but teams that can make the teams that could potentially be in the field.
Wofford was in the field last season. Bethune-Cookman is going to be the favorite to come out of the SWAC. I don't think that Merrimack team's going to be very good at all.
But. What do you think the benefit is of playing? Because you've seen a couple SEC teams have already played a game like this. I mean, Florida opened the season with Arizona. Mm-hmm. In Vegas,
game,
like what's the benefit maybe for Stephen Pearl and this group of guys getting their first taste of D1 basketball to have gotten those three games together at home before playing Houston?
It was smart. I mean, last season they only got one before they played Houston, but that team was very veteran and they had been through the fire before.
That team could have opened the season with a game like that. Like, that's the kind of.
Well, I remember the team before that opened with Baylor. Mm-hmm. And so, yes, this team needed the time to and the spacing to get going and play, you know, three bye games to get their feet wet. And I think there's some areas from this team like that could serve them well in this game. I think Auburn's offense, playing fast, playing efficiently like they have without really shooting well from deep, I think is an awesome sign. And the other thing is that, yes, every team Auburn's played so far this season has been smaller than them, and they have crushed them on the boards.
Yeah, well, Houston's not.
Houston's not going to be that
way. Not even close.
Houston's not going to be that way, but I do think Auburn winning the rebounding battle by the margins that they have is a good sign because if you get in the habit of crashing the glass like they have, when you carry it over to the teams that are bigger, you know, it could be one thing if Auburn just rolled the ball out there and, like, they were going to out-rebound them just kind of – they've made a concerted effort to rebound. And, like, that is, like, square one against Houston. Because Houston can't – like, Houston's not shooting the ball well to start the year. They're not getting to the free throw line very often either. But guess what they're doing? Grabbing the ball off the backboard and putting it right back up. And so if you let them do that, it doesn't matter how they shoot from the outside. They will beat you because they'll pair that with a really good defense. The fact that Auburn is crashing the glass and cleaning up the glass on defense as well as they have – look, it's not going to guarantee you anything against Houston, but it's a good spot to be in. You wouldn't want to be going into this Houston game with Auburn being like, yeah, they've been okay on the glass. Like, no, they have been dominant. They have been one of the best teams in the country in rebounding, and they should. They should have that moving forward. Also, doing that without Keyshawn Murphy these last two games is
absolutely
big. That's very big because that's really your best rebounder on the team.
Well, I mean, it's great to be able to get him healthy. It's also been great for Mech to be able to get out there and get some experience, you know, at this level. Granted, against not the toughest competition, but I mean, still they gaining some confidence.
They get Mech out there. Jovic is getting to play a good bit. And then also you get more sway as well because, you know, he gets to play more of the four and the five. Keyshawn Hall played more of the three. It just they've been able to handle it really, really well. And I continue to be very high on the potential of a fully healthy starter Keyshawn Murphy. His numbers last season at Mississippi State were fine. This is a dude who came off the bench at Mississippi State last season, averaged 13.5 a game in SEC play.
Yeah, I mean, you can see – I mean, people didn't talk much about him offensively, but he's got some nice moves around the basket,
and he was excellent on offense against Bethune-Cookman with one foot.
Right,
like and so like he's off to he's a guy that you want to absolutely have ready to rock by the time the games start getting really really serious. But yeah, in this game, again, it would be one thing and be like if Auburn wasn't rebounding as well or hasn't been as impressive, and it's like oh they're missing again. No, they're missing their best rebounder and they've done really well on the glass, and it's like. And that can only be a good thing.
Yeah,
it doesn't guarantee you anything, but it can only be a good thing when you go into face a team like Houston.
Oh, yeah, and you mentioned they haven't shot it, only shooting 28% from three.
Barely getting to the free throw line. That's the other thing. For a team as physical they are, they are not – they have been the more physical, bigger, stronger, faster team against everyone they've played so far this year, and they're not going to – they have one of the lowest free throw rates in the country. It's really weird.
The rebounding you were talking about, it's like it's insurance, right? Like if what you're trying to do isn't working, being a great rebounding team can be – it can narrow those margins, and if you're better than the other team everywhere but on the boards, watch them hang around, right? Like watch them stick around and refuse to go away because they've always got a chance to end your possession or keep their possession alive.
Yeah, Houston's free throw rate so far this season 356th in the country.
Wow.
Only on 18. It's a free throw rate of 18. The other thing I would say is really interesting in this game coming in is Auburn has two scorers. And we'll see. Ty Bedford's got to get going shooting the ball, but he's fully capable. I mean, he did it last year in this Houston game. But him and Keyshawn Hall, I think you are going up against the best team defense in America. The fact that you have a couple of isolation scorers, I think, is going to be very helpful, and you're going to play fast. Why did Auburn come back and beat Houston last year? They didn't let them get set up. They went down and attacked. This is a team that's playing fast. They're playing well on offense. And also, they got a guy that, like, they got two guys, I think, that feel like it doesn't matter who's across from them, they can get a shot off.
And they both played against Houston.
Yes.
I mean, Keyshawn Hall played against them in conference last year, as did Kevin Overton.
Yep.
So, I mean, you've got three guys with Tahad who really played well against Houston last year, and Keyshawn Hall and Kevin Overton who have experience playing against
Houston. If you can get those defensive rebounds like we were talking about and get out and go and get down the floor and score before Houston can get their defense set up, it makes a huge difference. The good news there. Auburn's offense should be playing with a ton of – they're not shooting the ball well from deep, and it's 90-plus every game. It's going to be a lot tougher today against Houston, not only because of their defense and because Houston plays slower, like by default. But, you know, I think it's – Houston makes it tough to run your sets and run what you're good at. Auburn having a pair of guys that are just going to be like, hey, we feel like we can get a shot up. We can get a quality look because, you know, we're gifted at going one-on-one. That could be valuable. We saw how valuable it was when Pettiford basically won them the Houston game last season. This year you have another one in Keyshawn Hall who, like you said, has battle-tested against this Houston team.
Tahad sort of announced his presence in college basketball with that Houston game and the points he had down the stretch. And that was amazing because, you know, that was such a veteran team and you were adding this true freshman to the mix and wondering how he was going to fit in and he fit right in. Now we're wondering – When the competition level goes up, how many of those guys? You guys mentioned that, you know, the two Big 12 transfers and Keyshawn
didn't play very well against Houston last season, so you got to that's going to be on the front of his mind. He only had 7 points.
That I would think that's a little added incentive for him. I can't wait to see Elijah Freeman.
Yeah,
And
that's a
here's another big step up. But
well, my thing with Elijah Freeman is Elijah Freeman looks like a dude that Houston would have
in terms of the length
and the athleticism and that. And so if you're going up against that kind of team, why not have that? Other one I'm really interested in seeing, Sway, Houston kid. I mean, Houston kid and getting an opportunity to play and knows a good chunk of that Houston roster. He's going to be a fun one as well because it's tough to tell a freshman. We saw it last season with Tahad how special he was. It's tough to tell a freshman, especially a freshman front court player, hey, bud, here's your fourth game of college basketball. Welcome. You got to play Houston. But he looks built. He looks ready for the moment.
Well, it seems like it's going to be all hands on deck in the front court, too, because despite the fact that you've got the question with Murphy and you know how close to 100% is he going to be, if someone else isn't an option, it's like you're down to three, and one of them's Murphy, right? who's got the, so I mean, I think it's like you look and
depending on how you play Hall,
right? But it's like yes, depending on how you play Hall, but I think it's big for Aporum, and I think you're probably going to need minutes out of Jovic. Like,
you're going to need
Phil to come through, and he's
I think his last couple of games have been a lot better.
He's getting more comfortable
too. With,
you know, and rebounded
the ball very well. That was the thing that he really challenged
him
on
early on. He got there and had his hands on the ball and just didn't seem to, you know, be able to grip it or maintain it. I mean, you've seen him really clamp down when he goes to get rebounds the last couple of
games. And it's like if you don't go up tough with both hands against Houston, they'll just rip your head off and score on it. Like, so I think he's done a really good job of rising to the occasion, much like pretty much everybody on this Auburn team. I really, again, it's going to take a lot. It's going to take an incredible game for Auburn to beat a team like Houston. I like the matchup, though. I really do.
Yeah,
I mean, the fact that Auburn's playing fast and scoring high, that's a good recipe to try to beat a team like Houston.
And this year, I'm glad it's in this state and not out there.
Whew. I mean, could you imagine?
Yeah.
Would you think that a team that right now would seem like a bad matchup for Auburn would be like a team that more closely resembles last year's Auburn team, where you know it's a team really comfortable slowing things down and making you play half-court offense and attacking the rim and sort of running their offense through the post?
Probably.
Those aren't – I wonder if between Houston and Purdue, who seems like or Houston and – I don't know. There's other teams you could mention, Florida potentially, like of the supposed top teams, you know, that Auburn has to play. But no, I agree with you. I think Houston seems like – you know, we'll see how much they want to play in transition, right? Like how much does Houston want to play?
Usually not much.
Yeah, I mean, that's going to be – a battle of wills, right, between Auburn trying to force the tempo and Houston trying to grind things down.
So Auburn really ratcheted up the pace in that final 10 minutes against Houston last season and ended up being the difference in the game. You go back and look last year, Houston only lost 5 games. 2 of them were the 5 fastest games that were played that year, Florida in the national title game, and then when they lost to Alabama as well. You go back and look, the other 3 were all bye games. Louisiana, Toledo, and Jackson State. So, good teams that get out and go and are able to play at their pace with Houston had a pretty good track record of success. And then also last season, they had a close call with Arizona. They had a close call with Gonzaga. Those teams tried to get out and go as well. So, yeah, the pace is going to be really big in this game because if Houston gets to play at their pace, guess what? They're too good on defense.
They're a table saw.
Yeah, they're too good on defense, and they're too good at rebounding on the offensive end to, like, you know, they're going to want to limit possessions. It's kind of like what Auburn did last season.
Right.
If we can limit possessions, we're a better half-court team than you. So I think that's what makes it a really fun matchup.
All right, we're just underway here on the Thursday Drive. I'd love for you to join in. You can give us a call on the Drive hotline. Sponsored by Skybar, 334-321-1390.
You can also text the show, 334-564-1840 on the Drive text box, presented by Southeastern Industrial Contractors. They also sponsor the podcast, available wherever you get your favorite podcast, ESPNAU.com, or simply your favorite podcasting platform. Search for The Drive with Bill Cameron. That's all presented by Southeastern Industrial Contractors.
We'll get to our first break. Come on in and join us here on the Thursday Drive.
The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck. 502 or email thedrive@espnau.com.
Welcome back into the Thursday Drive. Bill, Dan, Justin Ferguson from the Auburn Observer. Ferg, well, you know, while we got a minute before we talk more Auburn athletics and then welcome calls in. Just talk a little bit about what all you've got going. What's some of the latest there at the Observer? What you got coming up?
Yeah, so the Observer basketball this week. Talking about the Wofford game. If you want to catch up on that, tomorrow will be a busy day at the Observer because we'll have a mailbag and a podcast out tomorrow morning. So you get a 2-for-1 tomorrow. And earlier this week, I wrote a story about just kind of how and why Auburn's offense was so much better than usual against Vanderbilt in football on Saturday, just kind of diving into some of the numbers and stuff that came out there. So auburnobserver.com, $6 a month, $60 a year. Gets you access if you sign up tonight or anytime in the next few hours. You will get two things tomorrow morning. So a big mailbag on the coaching search and basketball. And then we'll talk a lot of hoops in the podcast that'll come out tomorrow morning as well.
Oh yeah, coaching search. That is something else that a lot of folks are discussing right now.
I have thoughts.
Yeah, there's a few different directions that you could go, to start the conversation. I find the different opinions around Durkin's viability sort of like really interesting. Like from the folks that are absolutely sure that this is the right direction. Yeah. Through the spectrum of, I don't know, but I, towards.
If people want me to tear my opinions, I will. But, he's a candidate. He's a candidate. I think he's one of a large list of candidates.
The thing that I don't put too much stock in is got to keep him to keep the roster.
Nope.
Because that, I think.
There's no
guarantee.
There's
a possibility of being able to keep a lot of this roster regardless of who the head coach is.
Also, I'm going to be honest with y'all, this roster has lost a lot of games. That should not be the priority. You shouldn't make a years-long decision based on what may happen next season with certain guys. And here's the other thing, too.
You better not make a head coaching decision just based on what you think it'll be on next year's roster.
Correct.
It would almost be a judgment on, Hugh Freeze kept saying Auburn was close.
Can I make my take here? If you were mad and frustrated that Hugh Freeze kept saying that they were close, and then you want to keep as much as what he built the same as possible, that doesn't square with me. I don't know how one's right and the other one's not.
Well, you just figure. I think what a lot of people think is without him, they'll be able to make that step.
Maybe, but so my
the position
thing,
we need to be. Hugh Freeze was close, but also the problem.
Yeah,
he was
that barrier keeping them from making that step is what a lot of people think.
I don't know.
Which is low percentage that's actually
Yeah, I don't know.
So my thing with Durkin is if you're doing it for roster retention, there's nothing guaranteeing these guys are going to stay. You can make the you can promote, and then when January opens, and when that transfer portal window opens, guys can change their mind. They can go in. Just keeping a head coach, promoting from within, is not going to guarantee that the roster comes back. It's not. There's nothing legally binding about that.
But even if it did,
you could also question how short-sighted of a move it would be. Compared to what else is out there.
Especially.
That's the thing. This is not a shallow pool of candidates.
No, and it's one where John Cohen has continually talked about active coaches.
Sitting coaches.
And from
that's
all
not what DJ Durkin
from all indications, there have been quite a few that have been having and conversations with John Cohen this week.
And here's my thing with Durkin as well. This Auburn defense. Let's be honest about this Auburn defense, okay? We saw this Saturday against Vandy. There's only been a couple times this season where the other teams felt like they've had to put up points on the board and feel that pressure and chase the game.
Well, and in just about every case when the other team has had to, they have.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. I mean, there have been games where Auburn has played statistically very well defensively, but then you've got to have a stop.
Fourth quarter against Oklahoma.
They've been asked to do way too much.
You're absolutely right.
You will never hear me say anything, you know, different about that. Like
I'm not going to complain about this defense, but
no,
I mean, for
but here's the thing. Here's the thing with Auburn's defense this year, because I ran the numbers today. They are ninth in the SEC in yards per play, eighth in points per game, and then if you look at SP Plus, which takes who you play into account and adjust, they're seventh in the SEC in defensive SP Plus. So this is a middle of the road SEC defense. You're paying the guy the second most amount of money of any defensive coordinator. So again, I think there's a thought out there. It's like, well, keep Durkin as the head coach because this defense is going so well, and it's like that's they're better than the offense.
They are,
but. It needs context, and I think Baylor, and I think the end of the Oklahoma game, the end of the Missouri game, parts of the A&M game, but not really as much that one. But and then definitely the Vanderbilt game. When the other team has felt like they have to go put points on the board to win, this defense has had a harder time hanging on. And again, good defense, not great defense, and I think that should be applied into this situation. Like that, like I think people are like, well, our defense has been awesome this year. We definitely need to keep it. Let's define awesome real quick compared to your peers.
It seems to me like if you are debating between, and let's just use, and I won't even use a name, like the best possible realistic external candidate and DJ Durkin. If you're deciding between those two, if you go with Durkin, it's because like you just said, the belief is that this roster is close. And I wonder what kind of patience you would have for the DJ Durkin experiment and when you would need to see results, as opposed to going with an outside candidate who may not keep very many of these position coaches and may have to withstand some fallout from the roster. Also, but you would also think, okay, maybe that guy gets a little bit of time to actually build his program, and it would be
think, how pressing is it to retain something that's about like needs an Iron Bowl upset to avoid a fifth straight losing season like that? You know, there's been talk where it's like people are like, well, there's some really good coaches right now who were interims that stayed on, and it's like, yeah, but what situations were they in, right?
Yeah.
You know, let's not act like where DJ Durkin is the same way as where Marcus Freeman was at Notre Dame or Brent Key was at Georgia Tech. It's a completely different situations. The other thing,
I don't know, Brent Key at Georgia Tech, they were struggling.
If you're,
they were struggling, but he won like four. He won four games.
I mean,
he took
a team that was really really losing and played 500 down the stretch, and then much better.
And he beat
since.
A couple of ranked teams.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
It just seems to me like John Cohen could sell 7-5 or 6-6 with a brand new head coach and a brand new staff next year.
A lot better
as a step forward. And if you keep DJ
well,
Durkin,
the schedule Auburn has,
the schedule is set up for a reset.
If you keep Durkin and a lot of this staff in place,
and you're around 500, then yeah,
I don't know if it's a success.
And look at the schedule.
I don't know if it's progress.
500 is seven wins next year, and this schedule is. There's no guarantee by any means.
And it's fair to question what it would end up looking like, right? DJ Durkin, his last nine games as a head coach, it was final eight at Maryland and the one this past week. His defenses have allowed over 40 points a game in those. And it's just like, you got to question, like, okay, some guys can be good coordinators, but you, like 5 years ago when it was the Kevin Steele thing, right, a lot of people were like, well, he hasn't had the record as a head coach.
Right.
And so it was like, okay, do you really want to do it? Kevin Steele's defense in 20 was better than Auburn's defenses in 25 in a number of areas.
I mean, and we've talked about how it appears to be increasingly difficult to call plays on either side of the ball
and be a head coach. The last thing I'll say is this. John Cohen has come out and said, because I asked him about it in the press conference last week. So before he made that move, before Auburn fired Freeze, it was, do you really want to get into a carousel that has Florida and LSU and Penn State in it? Are you better off holding out? And you didn't. And so I asked Cohen, I was like, that was the question going in. Why do you think you guys can be competitive with those schools right now in this market? He says, well, we think we have a great situation. We think we have the best job. Okay?
I think, though, they may have as good a financial situation as any of those
schools. Oh, sure. If you truly believe that, all right, ask yourself this question. Is DJ Durkin a candidate anywhere else for any of those other jobs? Or a guy like DJ Durkin, who is a coordinator on a team that is, like, the numbers are
struggling.
What they are.
Yeah.
That's the question. Is Florida, is Penn State, is LSU trying to hire a guy like DJ Durkin?
That's a good question. We need to get to our bottom of the hour break. We're going to open up the phone lines. I'm sure we have some thoughts to that. We'll talk more about the coaching situation and whatever you would like as we continue. David Paschal, right, joins us at 5 o'clock as well from Chattanooga here on the Thursday Drive.
Auburn IT delivers professional IT support.
Welcome back into the Thursday Drive. Bill, Dan, Justin Ferguson, and let's get to the Drive Hotline sponsored by Skybar.
Pat is up first.
Hey, Pat.
Hey, guys. Last time Justin was on, he made a comment after I talked about the coaching search and stuff, and you made a comment that Auburn was not in a position to hire a big-time coach, and I'm pretty sure that's what you said.
You already
hung up on me, so I was just curious, what did you mean by that? Because I completely disagree, and John Cohen has said many times that we're the best job out there. So I'm just curious what you meant by that.
I think it was after a Lane Kiffin discussion. I don't remember exactly.
Yeah, it was after Lane Kiffin.
Sort of the thinking why Auburn might not be able to poach someone who's in a great situation right now to come away from that to, and I guess like, and Lane Kiffin would be a great example of that.
Yeah.
Like the question of why wouldn't,
yeah, can you grab somebody who looks like, yeah, they're on the verge of making the playoffs?
Yeah, just I guess and yeah, folks were like, why would Lane Kiffin say no if plan A is just to make it more,
yeah,
specific.
I have been under the impression that when you have had this many losing seasons in a row, you're probably not going to end up buying at the top of the market. And I think I remember it as comparison to like Kalen DeBoer at Washington, like Alabama going and getting one of the top names out there.
Or LSU potentially shopping at the top of the market
right
now.
I think LSU situation has changed.
Yeah, LSU situation has changed. It's just really? like if Auburn could poach a sitting like awesome head coach at the power conference level, yeah, I could eat my words. I think a lot of the candidates who have been linked to this job right now, I think are great candidates for Auburn. They weren't necessarily like the DeBoer types, or like, I think,
right,
you know, Norvell at that point in time at Florida State. And I still tend to believe that. But, you know, I think John Cohen has the right thought in mind of, you know, find the best fit for Auburn and do what it takes to get him. And that might not be the splashiest name.
He
could throw something out of left field.
Well, real quick, to Pat's point, like, I would say, if you're a coach in a really steady situation right now at the major conference level, mm-hmm, Auburn can seem unsteady from where you are.
If you're there and you're looking at LSU in Florida, they can look unsteady too.
They could look unsteady too, and we'll see what kind of coaches
LSU did this and USC did this a few cycles ago, and it's like, I didn't know. My thought is I didn't think that Auburn could have that kind of swing in them, and I don't know if they still can.
It's interesting. I mean,
but now, as to Bill's point and to you know what Pat's saying here, like, I do think in this cycle though, the chaos at LSU and the uncertainty at Florida has positioned themselves. They have positioned them in a different spot.
Yeah,
I don't think Penn State can do it either.
Yeah.
I think with our team having the players, it's not like before our cabinet was bare. I mean, the main thing for Hugh Freeze was we got no players. So we need someone that can recruit.
It is different.
Players.
Yep. Yeah,
it's different. Right. I mean, if you're Lane Kiffin and you're sitting there thinking to yourself, okay, I'm doing good here, but I can't field a defense to win. I'm losing games because I can't score enough and I'm scoring a lot. And so I look over and I'm like, Auburn's losing every game by 7 points. And they're losing to top 10, top 20 teams, top 15 teams by 7 points. And I'm thinking to myself, well, I could be that 7 points easily. You know what I'm saying? So I just feel like it's different. And I just feel like, you know,
Ole Miss, to be clear though, Pat, Ole Miss has the one loss this year, right, to Georgia?
Right.
And they lost They lost the fourth quarter 17-0. And yes, that's a defense giving up 17, but it's also an offense scoring zero in that fourth quarter. So, I mean, I think for a long time – For a long time,
but he
the problem
38, didn't he?
But for a long time, the bigger problem was defense at Ole Miss. I think you know, and we'll see. You know, I think right now he's got a team that you know seemingly is capable of continuing to win, and we'll see. But Pat's point about like is the job more attractive now than it was post Harsin?
Because oh, yes. A million percent.
It's yeah. not even
because
a
of the roster.
Yeah. No question.
And that's something that I think is being lost amid everything going on.
And going back, I think my point is like getting a top big name guy. I think it was in comparison to like when Alabama was replacing Saban and some of these others. And I still don't know. I still don't know at that point. I do think the good news is I think some of the bigger names you have heard that are going to be on the move or could be on the move in the side, Auburn's going to be right there in the mix for them. So to your point, Pat, like you are right. They might end up buying at the top of the market. It might not just be, you know,
might not have been
the splashiest name in the world.
Or the names that we'd heard. Yeah. Because I was talking with Justin before we came on the air, and it's interesting. I've seen a couple of national guys today mentioning Lincoln Riley.
Now that would be the kind of swing that I didn't think Auburn could make in this cycle.
Because there's been buzz about LSU and Florida with him, and the word is
look,
USC will waive his buyout.
And to your point, Bill, if LSU and Florida have a shot at Lincoln Riley, why not Auburn in this cycle?
Exactly,
that's a very good point.
Yeah, exactly. Well, and just one comment on I was listening to the video of Summerall, and I mean he sounds like a fiery guy, and I kind of get that, but he even had said himself, it's like this when he got to Tulane this year, he only had five players coming back for this team, and when he got there, everybody left, and I think we got one of them, I don't know, but his name doesn't. It
yeah,
sounds
Rashawn
good
Pleasant.
To Auburn people. It sounds good to some people, but I don't believe it. Any recruits think, "Oh, John Summerall, I wouldn't play for that guy." I think we all think that. We all listen to the video. It sounds great, but how many current high school 4- and 5-star guys have John Summerall? If you said the name John Summerall, how many would know who he is? I don't think.
And then, you know what? That's an interesting point. I don't know how important name recognition is. It probably matters. You could counter with
Mike Elko. Mike Elko's my counterpoint.
Or DeBoer even wasn't necessarily a household. Yeah, I know he just coached in the national championship game.
Yeah, absolutely.
But yeah, no, Mike Elko coming over from Duke or, yeah, I mean, there are.
I'm of the opinion Heupel. That a place like Auburn, if you win, it's going to recruit. Like you're going to recruit. As long as you try.
But you got to win. But you got to win.
That's the thing. It's the priority, right? I think we saw it kind of get backwards in this last hire for Auburn where it was you had to recruit and you needed to recruit. But you got to, you know, and the wins didn't come. This is like, I think this is a position where if you win, the recruits will come. And it doesn't, to me, it doesn't matter if you have not been swinging at the top of, you know, the recruiting chart, so to speak, at your school. And I think there's several coaches that fit that bill that aren't necessarily just the Group of Five guys.
Really interesting stuff, Pat. We got to keep going. Bill, can I ask, just since we're talking about Summerall? The fact that he's a relatively well-known figure from his time as a Troy coach and as an SEC assistant, like his name does matter in Alabama high school.
There's no question about that. Like, I mean, high school coaches in this state, absolutely, and they will let their players know if they don't already know who John Summerall is.
To the question about his name recognition,
yeah.
Right?
Like, my thing is you got to find somebody who can win football games
right
for you. And then I think the rest will take care of itself. I think Elko is the perfect example of that.
Elko, and I would argue to an extent Heupel.
Heupel's a great example.
Like, I would say they're both guys who were not necessarily – I mean, sickos knew about them.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, yeah, the average rank-and-file season ticket holder probably didn't know too much about either of those guys, and the tenures have turned out
– well,
if Auburn's next coach has Josh Heupel's tenure –
it's like when someone asked me, it's like, what's the difference between John Summerall and Billy Napier? It's like, I don't know, but what was the difference between Billy Napier and Josh Heupel? What was the difference between John Summerall and Josh – like, you know, it's like –
yeah.
You make the hire, and you see how it plays out. But like at the surface, there are similarities.
What's the difference between Josh Heupel and Scott Frost? They both won at UCF.
That is right.
But they both get hired at major colleges.
And Scott Frost was in a much better spot.
Yeah, and much more highly touted.
Yeah. So I mean, it's a
crapshoot.
It is a bit of a dice roll. Let's get to Brett, who's hanging up before we take the break.
Hey, Brett.
Hey guys, when y'all were talking about the defensive statistics and all. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying that Durkin should be head coach. He would be the one I would pick.
Mm-hmm.
But as far as points per game, I mean, there is not a whole lot of difference between the number 8 team and defensive points per game and the number 4 or 3 team. There's just not that much difference. And, you know, Auburn did play Baylor, a good offense, whereas, you know, some teams didn't really play one real good out-of-conference offense. And the third thing on that, Auburn's offense is not just, you know, I think Auburn, if you look at all those teams in the top 8 on defense, I think they're about 4 or 5 that, you know, Auburn's, I guess, giving up 4 more plays a game. But Auburn's offense has been so bad, the other teams are able to run their complete offense and go for it on 4th down a lot because they know Auburn ain't going to do anything when they get the ball. I mean, it's just flat out not.
Oh, and I would say that the defense is – I mean, when you look at the reasons Auburn was in position, like what position Auburn had to win those first 5 SEC games – right, the first 4 they lost.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's because of playmaking from the defense. The defense ultimately didn't have enough to get you over the top in those games, and there
no
were
question.
some fourth quarter mishaps. But
and they won the Arkansas game, and they kept Auburn in the game against A&M when the offense couldn't, you know.
Oh, these are
stand on.
I tell you what, Brett, these are reasons why Durkin's a candidate at all, right? Like the fact that, like the reason folks are discussing DJ Durkin potentially, I mean, like the reason he became interim head coach and the reason that people are talking about him potentially keeping the job on a permanent basis is because I think of how the defense has answered the bell despite adversity
right. This
season. It's just a matter of whether or not that's the best thing for the program long term to have him in that role.
Yeah, well. But Lord knows, if he's willing to stick around, it would almost be a reason for me to exclude a coach if he didn't want Durkin around. Because if he's got an excellent coach as a defensive coordinator and somebody who can recruit, and you don't want to keep them around, I'm not really sure you're the man for me.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting because to your point, Brett, like Durkin is under a big money contract to be the defensive coordinator at Auburn. So, yeah, the next head coach, that's something to consider because if you want to bring in all your own guys, that's going to be something that's going to be even more costly to Auburn if that means no more DJ Durkin.
Appreciate the call, Brett. We have to get to our final break of hour number 1. Stick with us as we continue here on the Thursday Drive.
War Eagle, this is Coach Larry Vickers, and you're listening to ESPN 106.7.com.
Welcome back in. Final couple of minutes of hour number 1 here on the Thursday Drive. And reminder, David Pascal from the Chattanooga Times Free Press, who is wrapping up his show on WGOW in Chattanooga right now, will join us a little after 5. So that'll be coming up. Then we'll reopen the phone lines at around, after we're done with David, you know, before 5:30. For the rest of the show.
Auburn's off this week, but there are some SEC games on Saturday.
Yes, there are. There are a couple of really interesting ones.
Significant postseason implications. You look and Oklahoma, I think, is probably – I mean, they're
out if they lose. They're hanging, Tuscaloosa.
They're hanging on.
Yeah, but they're out if they lose.
But they got a must-win game in Tuscaloosa against an Alabama team they beat last year. Texas is still hanging on. They go to Athens. I wonder – what kind of path there would be for a 9-3 Texas team that didn't play in the SEC championship game.
It'd be tough, but, I mean, you'd still think they'd have a shot, but
it's crowded.
The third loss is going to make it really tough.
Yeah, and it just feels like there's going to be some solid 11-2 teams without that extra loss. And fair to wonder, too, like, if Oklahoma doesn't keep winning, Texas could be 9-3 without –
what's the marquee win?
Well, if they lose Saturday – it would need to be A&M. Keep in mind, too, Texas still has A&M coming to Austin. That could be a 10 or 11 win Texas A&M team coming to town by that point. So, yeah, some big ones in the SEC. It feels like Some of the, I mean, if you have three losses by now, I don't know, Tennessee and Missouri.
Yeah, they're on the outside looking in. I mean, it would take some really crazy things, I think, for them to get in.
Arkansas and LSU, I mean, if both coaches have been fired, should the game even be televised, right? I mean, you can question if...
It's the game for the boot, right?
That one should be free. Put it on YouTube,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, that's right. Let us see something. All right, we're halfway done here on the Thursday drive. David Pascal joins us when we come back for hour number two, so stick with us.
Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7.
And online at ESPNAU.com.
To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email the drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome into hour number two of the Thursday drive. Bill, Dan, Justin Ferguson from the Auburn Observer here in the studio. As the sun settling here on a beautiful day here in Auburn. I want to, again, remind you guys especially, Game Day Men's Health is now here in Auburn. They're off Moores Mill Road. And, if you've had any concerns about your energy, I mean, look, we get older, you sort of lose some of that energy. I was feeling tired, sort of dragging a little bit. They are great at being able to handle anything concerns with energy, low T, ED. I mean, weight loss, that is definitely something that, I've always been fighting. Went out and saw Aaron and and Chad, the great folks out there at Game Day Men's Health. Had a consultation, went over the complete medical history. They did some blood work and have come up with a great plan. And they can do that for you, too, as well, guys. Game Day Men's Health, just off Moores Mill Road here in Auburn. Again, it is Thursday, and that means here in hour number two, we're going to welcome in our good friend from Chattanooga, just wrapping up his show on WGOW. And, of course, longtime writer with the Chattanooga Times Free Press, David Pascal. David, how are you doing today?
I am doing wonderfully. Hopefully you guys are as well.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we've got a week where, no, it's not going to be another narrow loss for Auburn football.
I tell you, that is just beyond agonizing if you're an Auburn fan to go 0-5 in one possession games. I mean, y'all have lived through it. It's been brutal. Even, in the game last week, I mean, the offense just looks fantastic, but then the defense plays its worst game of the year.
I keep thinking David Pascal is a really useful resource at this time for Auburn.
And you're right.
Well, but I mean, at every time, but especially now, because David, you saw Tennessee cycle through those coaches trying to find, like, the stabilizer after Philip Fulmer before they finally landed on Josh Heupel. And it feels like that sort of, now that Auburn's fired a third head coach since 2020, it feels like Auburn's in an alarmingly similar situation. I guess there were NCAA,
concerns
as well. Yeah, issues. And I think but other than that, it does feel like Auburn's in a program like trying to find that steadying hand.
Yeah, and I've said it before. I feel like Josh Heupel is this decade's Gus Malzahn. I mean, his lows are never going to be just brutally low, and his highs can be very high. I mean, Gus Malzahn had an unbelievable first season. People forget that in 2017. And, of course, Kerryon Johnson got hurt, too. But, I mean, they were number two in the country going into the SEC championship game in the CFP rankings. I mean, people always talk about two-loss teams, back in the four-team era and how tough it was for two-loss teams. But Auburn was sitting there on the doorstep with two losses before they lost to Georgia. And so, Heupel has taken Tennessee to an Orange Bowl and then, was part of the inaugural 12-team. And we've talked about it. I mean, I don't think Auburn or Tennessee is going to, and we talked about this a little bit last week. When you look at the league being 16 members now, I think it's tough for Auburn and Tennessee to crack the top five. What you want to do is be in that next little group to where when the bounces fall your way and you win the one possession games, you can move from like seventh or eighth in the league to the top. Kind of like Oklahoma's having a different year from how they did last year. That's A&M. Just what it's going to take. A&M, absolutely. That's an even better example.
Yeah, and so it'll be really interesting as we go. I mean, there's still plenty of time. I mean, the names are really flying out there. I mean, what a difference it is from the way it used to be, David, where you would hear some rumbles, but now, I mean, there's no question the ADs are not naming names, but they're admitting that yes, they're talking with seated head coaches about their openings.
Yeah, and I mean, everybody, one of the most coveted, it's no secret out there, is Lane Kiffin, and you just don't know how many times at a place like Ole Miss, everything will fall into place. And this year, everything seems to be falling into place to where they're going to be in the playoff with the potential of even hosting like a first-round game. And if that's Lane Kiffin, are you walking away from something
right
like that? Which means if you're all these other schools trying to pursue a Lane Kiffin, how much does a deep run in the playoffs affect that?
Yeah, and we've talked a lot about the candidates for the Auburn job, obviously, in the aftermath of Hugh Freeze being let go. Let's talk a little bit about some of the other places in the SEC looking for a coach. What do you think Florida is thinking about and leaning towards? That's another administration that probably can't get another coaching hire wrong.
Yeah, I mean, you've had two. It's been really weird how LSU and Florida have been in tandem with their chaos this year. And of course, LSU's was wild because everything looked so hunky-dory Labor Day weekend when they won at Clemson, whereas Florida, by the second or third game of the season, had lost to South Florida, and you're like, whoa, this just got ugly for Napier. But, you've got the interesting dynamics with those athletic directors where, LSU chose to move on with its athletic director, whereas Florida is sticking with Scott Strickland, and they both messed up on football coaching hires, but they both made a lot of good hires in other sports. I mean, LSU won a baseball national championship recently, a women's basketball championship not too long ago. Florida's coming off the men's basketball. So it's weird that both of those schools have been good in other sports, but that seemed to save Scott Strickland, but it didn't for Woodward at LSU. I have to admit, I don't spend a ton of time, racking my brain with candidates in mid-November. I really don't. I mean, you asked me that, and it's a fair question, but it's just like, I just don't want to live in this world where every November and early November, you've got to speculate on all these candidates. It's a fact of life. You got to do it, but it's just kind of, is this where we are?
Yeah, no kidding. Hey, there is plenty to talk about, though. I mean, you mentioned cracking the top five. Right now, it looks like the SEC is in shape for sure to have four teams in the playoff. But games this weekend could go a long way to either adding to that or even putting those in jeopardy. I mean, we were talking about. I mean, you mentioned Oklahoma a little while ago. Oklahoma has to win to have a shot at the playoffs.
They do, and it just shows. I mean, we were just talking about coaches, and it just shows a situation where Oklahoma winning in Knoxville kind of got Venables back on the right side of things as far as his fan base and, having a team that's challenging for the playoffs. But then that can all go away with a loss in Tuscaloosa, especially if it's a lopsided loss. But, yeah, you've got an unbelievable ABC doubleheader with Bama, Oklahoma, and Georgia, Texas. I mean, that's I've said it before. I hate conference expansion and conference realignment. I hate that we've got these 16-team leagues. But, I mean, the one thing that's just undeniable is the television inventory, and it's never more evident than when you've got back-to-back games like that this weekend.
Yeah, and speaking of that Georgia-Texas game.
It's pretty deniable if you've got YouTube TV right now, David.
It's a word we can't use. That is what it is if you've got YouTube TV like we do. But
mouse.
But for Texas, a loss here, the preseason number one team could really be in jeopardy. That would be their third loss, just their second conference loss, but their third loss.
It would be a bad one, and they would definitely be on the outside looking in. And that's what's so weird in this day and age is a lot of times you have to cheer for the school you hate most. And so the one saving grace that Texas would have, because I think they would be on the outside with a third loss, but the one thing they would have is the fact that they would get to host their hated rival, Texas A&M.
David, looking around the rest of the the Georgia season has been fascinating to me, right? Because that's a team that, I mean, they came into the season, folks thought potential playoff team. The early loss to Bama, a setback, but I mean, they're quietly chugging along, and I mean, I don't know if I'm thinking anybody is winning in Athens between now and the end of the season with what we've seen from them.
Yeah, Georgia, I mean, you just look at those availability reports, and there were offensive linemen all over those things the first half of the season. They're all gone now. As far as the injuries, they're all healthy. You're starting to see that. And it was – I want to hesitate on the result in Starkville, because while it was thorough, I mean, that was an absolute beatdown, it kind of reminded me, you know, Jeff Lebby's a Heupel disciple, and it reminded me of one of those games like when Georgia played Tennessee when Heupel first got there. They would script that first drive and take a 7-0 lead, but then Georgia would just have way too much talent for Tennessee, and they just had way too much talent for Mississippi State. But it certainly was, I mean, it is a unique dynamic. Who would have ever thought that going into this week 10 or whatever, game 10, that Gunnar Stockton would be the statistically superior quarterback to Arch Manning, but he has been. I mean, next to Ty Simpson, I mean, Stockton is the guy in the league that just doesn't cough the ball up, and that's a great way to keep you in games.
No question about it. But if Georgia were to lose to Texas, they've got to go to Tech to end the season. So, I mean, this is a very important game for Georgia as well. Not saying that they could then, not be concerned about having to win at Georgia Tech. But, I mean, a loss here would put them on the verge of elimination there on Black Friday.
It would. Now, that game is in Mercedes-Benz for the first time. And so that will be, even though it's, it is Georgia Tech's home game, that will have a feel of a cocktail party, because Georgia will have at least half of the crowd at that game and could even have 60%. So it's not a true road game. But, yes, I mean, you're talking about a game that went, what, 7 or 8 overtimes last year in Athens? So, I mean, that would be the make-or-break game for Georgia if Georgia lost. And I don't think Saturday's a gimme for Georgia. I mean, they are at home, but Texas is Texas, and they've got the Taft kid back in the secondary, and they've gotten healthier too. I just think both of these teams are playing their best of the year, which is why I think that game Saturday night is so appealing.
Yeah, and then, I mean, could things be much better set for you mentioned we were mentioning Lane a little bit ago. I mean, how can they not just absolutely destroy the Gators on Saturday?
And that's an interesting one up here from where we are, because next week Tennessee goes to Gainesville, and Tennessee has not won in Gainesville since 2003. But Tennessee, if Ole Miss wins, would play a Florida team that would have 7 losses and would be ineligible for the postseason, obviously. So that's this is already, the 9/11 year in 2001, they actually played in December, because that was that week when all the games got moved back. And so they played in Gainesville in December. But this is next week will be the first Tennessee Florida game ever in November. And I know, that is one of those things that I think Tennessee, usually you try to root for the team that you're about to play, to win so that they might overlook you or whatever. But if Florida does lose to Oxford, especially if it's bad, you do kind of wonder if they would mail it in the rest of the way, even though they would have two very natural rivals to close the year with Tennessee and FSU.
It sure looked like they mailed it in last week.
It really did. I mean, when you're talking, whenever you're talking worst loss in 75 years or worst loss since Bear Bryant beat you, that's pretty incredible.
Yeah, we were writing the closing sentences on the Mark Stoops story.
Yeah, no kidding.
A couple of weeks ago, and all he's done is won a couple of SEC games, including
fired the Auburn coach and then destroyed the Florida interim
unconditional surrender by Florida.
Yeah, the only time I've seen Kentucky live this year, they gave up 56 points to Tennessee, and in the two games since, they've given up a total of 10. They're averaging 5 points allowed per game since giving up 56.
Wow, that is crazy. And you know, one quick thought, it's a shame that Ole Miss Florida game isn't down in Gainesville, because it would be wild seeing that entire crowd chanting Lane and cheering for Lane as their Gators are playing against Ole Miss.
Yeah, and he had a great quote about that earlier this week, saying how do you, you know, this dynamic that you're the Ole Miss coach, but you've got Florida. And Kiffin basically brought up where we are in this day and age. He's like, you better, you know, be thankful for where you are and better win where you are. Because, you know, he brought up the point, he goes, we're one game away from being out of the top 10. We're two games away from being out of the top 25. And we're three games away from me being out of a job. And which sounds exactly like the Brian Kelly story this year and the James Franklin story this year.
Yeah, you're right. It is crazy. It is what it is. Like a couple of folks have said this week as well. But it's never not entertaining. So that's one thing we have going for us, is it gives us plenty to talk about, David.
Yeah, no doubt. And I mean, that's where, and I know that can be frustrating if you're Auburn, because even though Arkansas is not a great team, just winning a game and getting off the schneid, you don't see that zero in the win column anymore. And then you've got Kentucky coming in, and there's a chance to get a little momentum, and you blow that one. And so that's why I know it's got to be tough, you know, at Auburn this year. That it is just unbelievable what they have gone through.
Yep, and we'll see how things do turn out. David, always great to be able to spend a little time. But you got anything else for me, Dave?
Hey, David, called the Troy Trojans women's basketball team defeating the Chattanooga Mocs last night. As a matter of fact,
that was impressive. That was a rematch of an NIT game, right?
That's a good Chattanooga team. Coach Shermer's got you know, they're the preseason pick to win the Southern Conference. They got the preseason conference player of the year in Ellie Saldez. They're going to be fine, but it's an impressive start for Shanda Rigby and her Trojans.
Yeah, they must be pretty doggone good. Of course, UTC had Wes Moore, who's now at NC State for years, and Wes Moore's the best coach UTC's had in any sport. I mean, he had teams that were like 29-3 and advancing in the NCAA tournament. So there's a lot of history to UTC women's basketball, and on the men's side too. The men won the NIT last year, but yeah, I saw that score and I was like, Troy must be pretty good, because they took them to the woodshed.
David, again, we really appreciate it. It's always great to be able to have a little time with you. Let's see. We've got another Thursday before we get to Thanksgiving. So let everybody know, you know, how they can keep up with everything that you're doing.
Sure thing. TimesFreePress.com for the articles and WGOW for Sport Talk, which is 2-5 Central each day.
All right, David, we really appreciate it. Thanks a lot. Have a great week, and we will weekend. We'll talk to you again next week.
You guys do the same. Take care. Always enjoy it.
See you, bud.
David Paschal joining us as he does on Thursdays. We'll get to our first break of hour number two. Open up phone lines. Love for you to join in as we continue with the Thursday Drive.
The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck.
Welcome back into The Drive here on this Thursday afternoon. Bill, Dan, Justin Ferguson from the Auburn Observer. Again, thanks to David Paschal for joining us here this afternoon, as he does every Thursday. Phone lines are open. We'd love for you to join in. If you want to get in, we had a little discussion earlier. Just, you know, we talked some Auburn basketball. Tigers getting ready for a huge matchup against Houston on Sunday afternoon. Auburn football, of course, with the week off. The local, I mean, our two teams that we carry right here on the Auburn family, the Auburn Network family of stations, both be on the road tomorrow night.
Yeah, no OTL tomorrow, right?
Because that is right.
On the line postponed because of the high school playoffs. Both Jacob and Christian will be calling action.
Lee Scott's headed to Montgomery, while Auburn High is headed down to the Mobile area to take on Daphne.
Justin Ferguson from the Auburn Observer, you covered the game Friday night at the Duck.
Best high school game I've covered in a long
wild
time.
Wild one.
Yeah, best high school football game I've covered in a very long time. Whole lot of fun. Auburn High to be down 21-0 early. Same situation they were in back in week two.
Yeah, but when they got there, Vestavia poured it on in that one.
Yeah, and it was just a completely different game. Auburn did not panic. They made some plays, got back in the game, and then kept their foot on the gas all the way. It was as good of a playoff game as you're going to see. Auburn High has got to go to Daphne tomorrow night. I am going to a rare one. Usually I'm at Auburn High if they're at home, or I'm usually on the road or something like that. With the off weekend in Auburn High on the road, I'm going to be in Loch-Poga tomorrow night. Poga's got Providence Christian in a big one there in the playoffs. And they went on the road and killed Goshen last week. Just ran up the score on them. So, really fun. People who may not be as plugged in with high school football locally, Loch-Poga's got, like, an excellent team this year. They got off to a slow start the season. They're averaging, like – they've scored 40-plus points in, like, their last 8 or 9 games. Mm-hmm. Like, they've got a very, very fun offense. So I'm looking forward to covering that game out in Poca tomorrow night.
Yeah, big games and playoff games at Loch-Poga.
Yeah,
always.
Round two.
Oh, it's going to be so fun.
Yeah. Always a lot of fun. Yeah, you've got to have a good time. Want to get to
we got plenty of time.
How about Slack calling in, one of our favorites?
Hey, Slack.
What's up, guys?
What's up, Slack?
Well, I'd be at Loch-Poga game tomorrow, too. So
there we go.
What is Providence Christian offer?
They are – that's Dothan, I remember it correctly. I think
so. Are they a former school in Dothan, another name, another school that used to be in Dothan?
I don't know. They've always been Providence Christian from my thought, from what I can remember.
Did they move – have they moved, like, from the private schools to the AHSAA?
I think they may be
one that's
of the
what
more
I'm thinking,
ones.
Slack.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking as well.
Okay. I remember the Houston Academy is in the day.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
In Dothan area, and I was wondering.
Yeah, they were really
and
good
I know that
for
Dothan
a while.
Schools have combined to schools.
Yeah, it's funny. They split years ago, and then they combined.
Yeah. And you hadn't heard anything else from them?
Yep.
Hey, I got a James Franklin question. Why James Franklin name is, like, when people – in Auburn say, hey, James Franklin, no, he can't beat Ohio State.
Well, I guess because he's played so many games against ranked teams that, that's one of the first things that gets brought up is that record against those top teams.
Slag, I've mentioned before, James Franklin has a more impressive resume. Like, you look at the last
–
well, I was going to say, look at the last 6 or 7 coaches Auburn has hired. And when Auburn hired them, and compare their resume upon getting the Auburn job to James Franklin's resume right now. Now, does that mean he's the right guy for the next 3, 5, 8 years of Auburn football? I'm not sure. But no, you raise an interesting point, because he did build a team good enough to win playoff games.
Oh, you're right. But, and now, Justin, let me ask you, have you not heard that James Franklin is one of those guys that John Cohen could or may have already talked to?
Yeah, I've heard that. And it's interesting because he had said he had talked about sitting head coaches,
right,
and that would rule Franklin. But I think Franklin's such a unique case, though, in the fact that, he's a fired coach that was
– recent, very recently was a sitting head coach. And I also
But also was in the playoff semifinals last year.
Yes,
it's
he
like
was.
A very different
and,
situation. Right.
Well, I also thought – but, John, we listened very carefully to what John Cohen said and took it to the – well, he's going to be – he's going to talk to sitting head coaches. He didn't say he's not going to talk to somebody else. We just sort of assumed that.
He had said he thought that everyone they were going to be interviewing outside of that room would be a sitting.
Would
coach.
Be.
Can
yeah.
I ask? Can I ask all three of you guys? Does the way it ended for Franklin at Penn State give you pause for what you're going to get at his new employer? The way.
I think to Slack's point, I think that's why there's some reservations from Auburn fans to be like, okay, you're not getting a guy on the upswing. You're getting a guy that, but his downswing was a lot higher than what Auburn has been in recently. That's kind of the pause. Other than that, I mean, yeah, the dude was as consistent as you could get as a winning college football head coach. It just couldn't get over the hump at Penn State. That situation had gotten toxic. Like, there was no way he should hang around there anymore. But yeah, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if he's successful at his next school. We'll see who that ends up being.
It was a lot of talk about Virginia Tech. That seems to have sort of cooled a little bit. There's been some talk of James Franklin at where was the other UCLA? I heard a little UCLA.
UCLA
too.
Makes sense. Arkansas. Yeah. I think a lot of those teams in that, not quite in the top tier of these jobs that are available
right
now.
They'd be thrilled to have a James
Franklin.
They
could love to go get a James Franklin, and probably know that they don't have to pay him as much as maybe some of these other schools would have to.
Well, that's my question about Auburn. You know, if this guy's got a 70% winning percentage.
Right. Well, look, it's on John Cohen. John Cohen has got to hire the guy he feels is going to be the best over the next 5 years. I mean, he needs somebody that isn't going to be.
I think there's some
on the hot seat.
I think how it ended at Penn State gives a lot of people pause, but I do think there's a fair amount of recency bias to it. I think if you look at the total body of work, like Dan said earlier, his resume is as good as anybody out there.
Yeah, and Coach Saban gave him a big thumbs up. Hey, you really fired the wrong guy.
I mean, it would be, and I don't even know if Penn State. I mean, because it felt like it had reached a point where Penn State probably needed to do something when it got to, like, it's one thing to be losing to Michigan or Ohio State, but when UCLA is beating you with the interim coach and Northwestern is beating you and the team is looking checked out, like it reached a critical point that I don't think it was at any juncture before this season. But yeah, like Justin said, I think James Franklin still has. I know there are some coaches out there with big-time resumes. It's fair to wonder what they've got left in the tank. Right? Like, hey, Urban Meyer's a great example.
Yeah.
People are talking about Urban Meyer for some of these jobs. I don't know what you get hiring Urban Meyer in 2025. I know what he accomplished at Florida in the, with Tim Tebow at quarterback. I know what he accomplished. Yeah, I know what he accomplished at Ohio State a decade ago with, like, Terrell Pryor at quarterback. That's fine. Right. Cardale Jones at quarterback. Right? But, like, who knows what you're getting in 2025 with a guy like that. James Franklin's success, even Jimbo, right? Jimbo's success feels like it's you're far enough removed from it to really wonder what you're getting. I think with James Franklin, he was winning recently enough that you should be excited about the potential of, whoever ends up hiring James Franklin. Like, I think it's his resume and the fact that he was winning very recently in college football. Like, that's a guy who was, it's not like you have to go back to a different era.
Oh, no. You don't have to go last decade or whatever. All right, we'll get to our bottom of the hour break. Got half an hour to go. Plenty of time for you to join us. 334-321-1390 here on the Thursday Drive.
Call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email thedrive@espnau.com.
Welcome back into The Drive, 25 minutes away from 6 o'clock here on this Thursday.
Yeah, you just mentioned, and we talked about it before, like the sudden emergence of Lincoln Riley into some of these.
Well, I mean, it sure seems like jobs. There are quite a few names that John Cohen is vetting. I mean, yesterday.
Well, not just Auburn, though. Lincoln Riley's name.
Oh, you're right. Lincoln Riley's name's another name that has popped up with Auburn, and apparently Arkansas, another PJ Fleck. Mm. I just don't see that as a I don't see that one as a fit.
Doug asked me, and we didn't carry the.
A few years ago, he was one of the hottest guys out there. Remember rowing the boat all the way to Minnesota.
Doug asked me. I was on the Max Roundtable earlier today. We didn't carry it because of women's basketball here locally, but it was on in Montgomery, and he asked me about Lincoln Riley, sort of being rumored at LSU in Florida.
Yeah.
as places.
And remember, he was the LSU guy before they hired Brian Kelly. Remember, I'm not going to be. I will not be the next head coach at LSU.
And he was. And he did.
He's right.
And
he was right. The next head coach at USC.
Things have really changed.
Do you know how
absolutely?
Do you know how absolutely toxic if an SEC team hires Lincoln Riley, them playing Oklahoma would be?
Yes,
that would be. I mean, warfare. Like, oh my goodness. Because those people hate that guy.
And that would probably, and that would probably, you know, that'd be like Lane Kiffin, where there's a couple of fan bases.
Did he win less than 12 a year there? I mean, he had an unbelievable record.
They're mad at the way
the Big 12 every year.
How he went out.
Well, a couple of fan bases mad about not necessarily the tenure, but the way the tenure ended.
Yes.
Sort of looking back.
It's the way Lane left Tennessee.
Yeah. It's.
I mean, of course, he hadn't won like that, but
there would be, no,
he'd just gotten there.
Some similarities. But no, I think for and folks said at the time, and Doug asked me about this, the thought that part of the reason Lincoln Riley went from Oklahoma to USC was the belief that when Oklahoma got to the SEC, it was going to get a lot tougher than it was in the Big 12.
And it's funny, though, the Oklahoma AD refuted that completely. Yeah. Said, no, that wasn't the reason.
And it's also like, I don't think it's that much easier for SC in the Big 10.
Ooh.
Right? I mean, when you think about
Think about the travel. Things you have to deal with being Big 10 team on the West Coast.
I could see why you'd want out of that.
I think so, too.
If you're not like... Like landing at Oregon, they got everything.
That's right.
You've got everything.
That's right.
You want
but that's
there.
But that's a college atmosphere there.
Yeah.
And I mean,
and you're also,
you know it, Dan. I mean,
I
USC,
will tell you,
UCLA,
I'll tell you,
it's tough, man.
Even when USC's good, especially now that they've got the NFL, which they didn't have when Pete Carroll was.
Absolutely.
They didn't have when Pete Carroll was there. They didn't have even when Lane Kiffin was there earlier in that decade. Like when USC's good, it's still it's not like being the college. It's like Lane Kiffin's experience in Oxford right now is very different from the experience of a champion, a successful coach at USC.
Totally.
You're fighting for attention. You're fighting for daylight. You're fighting for oxygen with a million other things going on in Los Angeles. I could see why, especially if the tenure's not going brilliantly, I could see why a coach like Lincoln Riley would say, I'm better off the next 3 years, the next 5 years coaching at any of the, not Arkansas,
man. Lincoln Riley getting ran out of town by Shohei Ohtani.
Shohei Ohtani and Harbaugh.
That's right. But I mean, he would be the star.
If you watch those.
He would be the superstar in Baton Rouge or in Auburn or in Gainesville.
Luka.
Man, I mean, think about
it. You can't tell me that the L.A. Chargers. That's just something that happens.
No,
in
they're
Los
not.
Angeles.
They're not even a team.
That is not
a team.
That is a team that plays games.
But I mean, there's so much there. There's so much other than
the LA Chargers. The LA Chargers are an excuse for visiting fans living in Los Angeles to get to see their home team play the Chargers, right? So it's like, hey, the Steelers are in town, and 70,000 Steelers
fans.
Like
even the Rams had, like, by virtue of winning the Super Bowl, got a little bit more, you know.
And the Rams had some old Rams fans, people who remembered. The Chargers are a San Diego thing that had to find a new home. They're a shelter pet in Los Angeles,
I wish they would have stayed in San Diego,
And things have not gone nearly as well for Lincoln as everybody thought. They're at USC.
They've been good, but not.
He won 11 his first year, but then he goes 8-5, 7-6. Now they're on the outside with a shot. But still a shot at the playoffs this year. But this is better than the last couple of years, but they're still not what, you know, everybody expected.
I could absolutely see the pivot for Lincoln Riley that any of these three jobs, LSU, Florida, or Auburn, is a brighter short-term future than what you're facing as a Los Angeles, as a USC team in the new Big Ten. Like I could see that.
Oh, it could be weird and just go to like Arkansas. That'd be fun.
That would be absolutely.
Like, whoa!
His overall record when we're talking about James Franklin, Lincoln's overall record's 88-26. So that's pretty good.
Yeah, it feels like Auburn's lost 26 games in the last.
They have
like
3 years,
3 years,
4 years, 4 years for it's close.
Yeah.
If they have it 4 years.
So I mean, no, the fact that his name is suddenly out there and who knows, you know, how much smoke.
Yeah,
is attached.
He feels
to
like
fire,
a Florida head coach. He feels like a Florida head coach. Like that is a Florida head coach in my brain. That's what it. Just like when I think of like what type of guy they want to go get, it would be splashy. It's offense. I've made the comparison before. Florida football is like Real Madrid in soccer, where it's like we want to win, but we also want to win doing it our way.
Yep.
And it's like if you're in here, like I mean, there were some good. Oh, well, maybe not. There was some good Muschamp moment teams.
They were pretty good.
They were mad as heck that they weren't like lighting up the scoreboard anymore because that's what they're used to.
I think McIlwain had a 10-win season.
McIlwain probably the other one I was thinking
of. But I think they both did. Yeah. Like, and they had a year
but it's like they have a standard where it's like, not only do we need to win, we need to look awesome style. When we're doing
it's
it.
It's got
to
be, yeah.
I mean, look, the Mullen thing was working until it wasn't. Like, I mean, he was winning.
Well, it turns out recruiting is important in the state of Florida.
He was cranking out offense.
Yeah,
I don't know if you know
that, but it's important to recruit.
It better be.
And I think, you know what, it's crazy because you would think that a guy with Mullen's resume would have a shot at coaching again in the SEC someday. But people hear those recruiting, like the recruiting comments, I don't know. I don't know where you could sell that unless he had
Arkansas.
I don't know. Like it's, I mean, but you're gonna need to recruit your way out of that problem too. Like it's.
You're never gonna recruit in the top half of the league, so you need to try to make the most of it. It's like Mississippi State, it's like Vanderbilt, it's like Kentucky, it's like what South Carolina normally is. But yeah, I think it's one of those. Just like you're not gonna recruit at a super high level, so you got to get creative.
If State flatlined, could they sell bringing Mullen back? I guess that's the one place where you could say like, all right, well if this thing
maybe.
Fell apart, yeah, like.
At least they won finally, didn't they?
But I mean, but it is interesting. I mean, the names that are out there and it seems like all three. Florida's not. You don't hear as many names with Florida again, and maybe that's maybe it's a good job by Scott Strickland keeping
maybe,
things quieter.
But also it's like every time people like float out a name that's like connected with Auburn, it's like, well, Florida wouldn't hire that guy, and it's like, okay, well, you're gonna have to hire somebody. Like you don't have this divine right unless it's a guy like.
Well,
like in Riley, where it's like you're not going to be able just to pluck whoever you want.
Florida's last two hires came from Louisiana and Mississippi State. By the way,
that's right. And they're sick and tired of that. They are
Before that from Central Michigan.
There's a Utah in there too.
They're all in. I mean, when I go look at the people, read the guys that I usually can count on knowing what they're talking about that cover Florida, and they're all saying it's Lane. It's got to be Lane. It's Lane or bust. And we'll see. It may be bust. What kind of records bust?
Meanwhile, Louisiana, I think, is going to hire their new football coach by election, I believe. I think isn't that what's going on there? I guess like the new head coach will also be the lieutenant governor or something like that. Interesting. You get into like the Napoleonic code down there. It gets wild.
Is Brian Kelly still the head coach? Is he back to still being the head coach?
He hasn't
because they haven't officially terminated him yet.
Should just show up.
Yeah, he's in.
He's
in that weird in between, right? Between he's been fired, but he hasn't lost his job or whichever.
It's purgatory.
He's in limbo.
Very apt for Louisiana.
I believe purgatory is located in Louisiana,
and I believe every parish gets a vote. I don't know exactly how it works, but I think it's like
electoral college.
And then they have a big parade when they announce the winner. I think everybody eats. It's in the cake, right?
Yes.
The baby and the king cake. Yeah.
Yep. The coach cake.
Yeah. That may well be the way they determine it.
Tell you what, if I'm Brian Kelly, I wouldn't accept any cakes from LSU.
No, I don't think so. I don't know that. Yeah, I don't know that they're going to be a whole lot offered to him anyway. But
there will be stuff in the cake, but not a baby.
You're right about that. Oh man, the coaching, this is insane. Just thinking that a few years ago that we'd be talking like this, in November about so many coaching openings.
I mean, there's still going to be and I get David Pascal's point that you know there's so much left in the season. You know,
his team's still got to coach, or the team he's covered's got to coach.
There's enough left in the season that like by and large the entire like the college football. Microscope, the spotlight should not move from, all right, let's talk about the coaching vacancies as opposed to all the stuff going on. But for places like Auburn that are searching for a coach, and even for places like around Tulane, right? Because I'm sure there's a lot of buzz that what's going to happen? Like it's hard to ignore that,
No kidding, because they know their guy, their guy is one of the hottest names out there. And when you come down to putting numbers and things, I'd be stunned if John Sumrall's back at Tulane next year.
Yeah, it just feels like too many major conference openings for a guy who's been on the doorstep.
Somebody's gonna grab him.
I mean, I remember the buzz at Troy, right? That there was the thought that he was a year before he jumped to Tulane, and that because that came out of nowhere, right? That was like Willie. That was like was that Holgerson? Losing the job at Houston to open up for Willie Fritz, and then like the dominoes that had to fall for John Sumrall to even leave Troy.
Mm-hmm.
Like people thought he was on the fast track to an SEC job then, And there's nothing's happened in the last 2 years to
change that
you.
Thought.
Like what stands out to you, Ferg, when people talk about like the qualities in Sumrall that make him, because as you say, fit matters. Like what is it about?
Did your brother coach with him?
No, he was on chip staff.
Okay,
but like the things that seem to like the things that make a Sumrall and Auburn
yep.
partnership. Likely to work.
Yeah, I think the big thing is he's winning. That's priority number one. I think the fact that, you know, I had this stat, Nathan King had this stat earlier this week at 247. I'm going to repeat it here. If Tulane wins two out of their last three games in the regular season, it'll be four straight nine-win seasons for John Sumrall. The only active head coaches who have had such a streak like that in college football right now are Kalen DeBoer, Ryan Day, Kirby Smart, Dabo Swinney, and Lincoln Riley. That's it. He's the only one who's done it at the Group of Five level right now. He's done it at two different schools. I think that's important as
yep.
well. You can, it was the Brian Harsin thing, right? You can be awesome at one place that you know very, very well, but the fact that he's done it in two different spots, I think, is pretty encouraging.
You don't want it to just be like a one-year thing.
Right.
Really, that's like the thought that it's 4 years in a row. There are a lot of trendy names out there. It's fair to wonder, like, is this a 1-2 year?
It's I think local knowledge, regional knowledge, conference knowledge. It's a guy who played and coached in this conference before. He's from Alabama. His wife went to school here. And he's a guy that I have continued to hear. And I heard this last year, but that it's been, this dude's going to be an SEC head coach. It's not a matter of if, but when. It's a guy who's going to be hungry for this job. I also think after a stretch of offensive-minded head coaches where it's their offense and what they do has been the selling point for these head coaches, it might be nice for Auburn to pivot away from that and go with a defensive-minded head coach and build around that. It might just be a good way to do something different. I also think just attitude-wise and
fit.
We hear John Cohen talk about edge, toughness, mm-hmm. tenacity. That's what we've always heard about Sumrall's teams. Now, because I believe in the balance of fairness, I think Sumrall's the best fit on the board for Auburn. He's the one that's made the most sense to me. But there are also some things that you look at and be like, okay, you know, what could be potential red flags? There's a couple of them that come to mind for me. Number one, he has not been the head coach at a power conference school.
Right.
If you think that you can, if you think that matters, and if you think that you can go get one of those, I can see where other names would be more appealing. Number two, the one knock I would have on Sumrall's teams, and I don't know how much this will necessarily translate to Auburn, because I think a consistent pattern of winning is good, and that's what you want to translate. For a Group of Five head coach that has been very, very popular in this carousel, there is not the signature upset win that he's had. He hasn't had one of those. He didn't have one at Troy. He didn't have one. He hasn't had one so far at Tulane. He's had great seasons, taking care of business with they have. They have
How many opportunities?
Four or five.
Have there been to
four or
to get
five?
One of those?
Had Ole Miss back to back years at Tulane. Had Oklahoma last year. Almost beat Oklahoma last
yeah.
year. With Tulane at Troy, lost to Kansas State on the road, and lost to there's one. Was that Iowa? Maybe that might have been the year they went to Iowa.
That may have been.
There's been a Clemson run in at one point as well, but I believe that was under guy before him.
Ole Miss
two before him.
Ole Miss. Was
no. Troy.
Chip or the mm-hmm. or Neil Brown.
Neil Brown, yeah.
Yeah, Ole Miss.
They always play Clemson. They've played Clemson since I was a kid.
Ole Miss represented the best shot the last couple of years to maybe get that big one. But I mean, Ole Miss,
Oklahoma last year. Yeah. There's not that signature.
Oh, it was Ole Miss
win.
2 years ago. That's right.
Yeah.
Those are a couple of pretty good teams.
Yeah.
So I mean, it's not like an embarrassment.
No. And here's the other thing too. It's like he's had close calls. That's the other thing I really like about Clark Lee these last two seasons. And yes, like,
oh, they've
got some
close games.
Well, and also it's like their losses have been close.
Yeah.
Like there's only been a couple where they've just gotten kind of taken to, like, and you know, I think that's a really good set. So, you know, I think Sumrall makes the most, I think he checks the most boxes of a guy. And I know, and I look, I get Auburn fans being like, Group of Five head coach, a little bit tougher of a sell. You might want a bigger name. And I understand where you're coming from there. I will contend, again, I wrote it the day Auburn fired Freeze, and I'll stick to it. He reminds me a lot of, in terms of background and where he is, what Auburn had when they hired Pat Dye. It's a very similar defense, 40s, knows this conference, knows this state, group of five success, where what we now know as group of five. It's a good parallel. And I think with time, he's going to bust his tail. And he has that tenacity I think Auburn really, really wants.
All right, we need to get to our final break of the afternoon. Back to wrap things up with Justin here on the Thursday Drive.
Hello, this is Lee County District Attorney Jessica Ventieri. The holiday season means more.
Live at ESPNAU.com.
Final couple of minutes here on the Thursday Drive with Justin Ferguson. Ferg heading up to Birmingham. Dan is as well for the big matchup on Sunday.
Might come by here and steal the Kia. Don't tell the bosses. All right, I'm going to take borrow the wings wagon.
We need a little.
I'm on assignment, right?
Yeah. Well, I mean that's marketing. It's Ferg, advertising.
You want to roll me in the wings wagon up to Birmingham? Taking the Kia. Still.
All right, Ferg, before we're out of time.
That's not a bad idea.
Quick
I'm in
thoughts.
The market for a new car. I'm not going to buy the Kia, but like I don't want to take my car.
What's Auburn got to do?
On Saturday against Houston?
Yeah.
Or Sunday.
Sunday.
Well, on Saturday they need to practice well. Sunday against Houston. I mean, my big thing is you got defensive rebounding. If you give Houston second and third shot opportunities, they will beat you and they will beat you badly. And then on offense, I think for Auburn, take care of the ball. And play fast, hit shots, be confident. Don't let Houston get comfortable on defense. If they hit shots and hit big shots and get on little runs, you got that crowd around you, you're going to be able to hang in there with that team. So it's going to be a blast. I'm looking forward to it. I think last year's Auburn-Houston game was the best basketball game I've ever watched in person.
Wow.
I don't think this one's going to be as the same.
Looking for the rematch.
I'm excited, though.
That's great. All right, and again, you got a lot coming up.
Yeah, sign up, auburnobserver.com, $6 a month or $60 a year. You get a mailbag with coaching search and basketball talk in it tomorrow. Also, Dan and I are about to record a podcast. We're going to preview that Houston game and talk some more hoops.
Sounds good. Thanks, Ferg. All right, we are out of time here on the Thursday Drive.
Gang's all here tomorrow, I think.
That's right. We should be here. Hopefully, you'll join us on the Friday Drive. Have a good one, everybody. We are out of here.
Hello, everybody. This is Bill Cameron from The Drive. Podcasts of The Drive are presented by Southeastern Industrial Contractors, now hiring for great-paying, skilled trade positions. Call 334-209-6355 to learn more. Thanks for listening.